nation, my relation. I'm Jamaican on your radio station. God cursing, could be worse. And you first, in a hearsing. Good as dead is, nothing left and nothing left and inside my head. And I need a headrest and feet from a warm breast. And then making hits from my childburn hips. Underground like, who you sound like? We all sound the same and you don't know my name.
Welcome back to Grindhouse Messiah, folks, and I'm here. This is Justin, a.k.a. The Painted Man. I'm here with my co-host.
Oh, I was waiting for you to introduce me.
You're supposed to jump in, man.
Oh, man. All right. So this is Blaine, as usual, Blaine McLaren, a.k.a. Mondo McLaren. If you want to follow me on any of the social medias, because we never plug that shit, tonight we are doing a little... intro to a pretty awesome interview we did last night. Who are we talking to, Justin?
We talked to Daniel Franzese, and y'all probably know him as the gay best friend from Mean Girls. I think that that's probably his career-defining role, but we know him as a lot of things, and he's in a lot of the kind of movies that we like to talk about, a lot of darker, you know, stuff in both the horror and... I don't really know what to call the movies, the right kind of genre to call the movies that we watched for this episode, but dark
downers.
Shit.
Downers.
Yeah, they're just really realistic dark shit. You know, but we'll get into that in a minute. But before we do, we want to thank our sponsors, Vinegar Syndrome, and Blaine wanted to talk a little bit about the films that we got from last month's package. Which we've been teasing a little bit, and we haven't had a chance to actually discuss. So, Blaine, tell us about those films.
Yeah, the films that we ended up getting in the mail was Welcome Home, Brother Charles, as well as MMA and Star Time. I'm sure all of our regular listeners know that we've been on a super big Jamal Fanaka kick, and this is great because it's a double feature with two of his earlier films that he put out, I believe, before Penitentiary. Welcome Home, Brother Charles is a fucking awesome kind of end-era blaxploitation film about a dude who ends up getting arrested and sent to prison. And while he's there, he gets brutalized by the cops. He gets this weird experiments put on him. He grows this super giant cock, which he chokes and murders people with. And it just kind of plays out... and it plays out like kind of like your standard blaxploitation, but it takes these turns that you usually don't see in other ones. It kind of takes on kind of cartoonish elements and plays with some really dark themes in the most playful and fun ways. But like we've talked about before, what I think is so interesting about these blaxploitation films from Jamal Fanaka is that most of the blaxploitation films came out of the East Coast, is specifically New York, and you kind of get that flair. It's kind of fun with the Jamal Fanaka films because you get to see this kind of West Coast take on blaxploitation. You kind of get to see neighborhoods like Watts and South Central kind of take in that kind of that era, what everything looks like. It's got a lot of fun nostalgia. A lot of my family is originally from that area in San Pedro, so it's kind of fun to see, kind of pre-riot, pre-white riot, South Central, and post riots in Watts. So that was a blast. MMA, the bonus film on here, which is
I'll chime in just briefly on MMA because I have seen MMA, but not recently. I didn't get a chance to watch it yet on these discs, so I can't speak to. How it looks and stuff. Well, I've heard the copy's great. But that's a really interesting and weird kind of blaxploitation-y film from the same era. It's a year, I think it came out a year after Welcome Home, Brother Charles. And the main girl from the South, like you, except she goes to the L.A. ghettos, and that's where she's, you know, the movie actually takes place. So it's, you know, what do you think of MMA?
MMA is, it's different than what I was expecting. It was a little bit more like hard boiled, a little bit more of like, you know, slice of life reality. I was kind of expecting something a little bit more like Welcome Home, Brother Charles, but I think it's a great companion piece with it, you know, kind of, because I did double check in. Yeah, Welcome Home, Brother Charles is Jamal Fanaka's first film, and MMA is his second film. So you can kind of see that he's still playing with similar ideas, but trying to kind of take a different angle on it. Out of the two, I think Welcome Home, Brother Charles is going to appeal more to you know, to all the listeners. But I think MMA, you really can get a lot out of it. It's a movie that I would like to revisit it with a little bit more reason. You know, if that's something we end up pairing in the future, doing a review to where I would, you know, maybe pay attention a little bit better. But overall, I mean, that's probably one of the better double discs we've seen from them. I mean, both copies are great. They look way better than they ever should. I would love to be able to show everyone the copy of Welcome Home, Brother Charles that I own. It is the world's shittiest bootleg that I bought at Dragon Con about 7 years ago. And it is, I would love to see how shitty the VHS was that it was ripped from. But so it's great seeing these in, you know, in kind of the best shape you're going to find them. The next film that we got from them is completely 180 degrees different. It is a 90s kind of horror thriller surreal thing called Star Time, which was written, produced, and directed by Alexander Cassini, stars Michael St. Gerard. It basically follows this fucking lunatic who loved this television program, and once it goes off the air, he starts seeing one of the actors from it and starts telling him what to do. And basically, he goes on the super brutal murder fest. Usually, like kind of these 90s films are pretty light on gore, usually a lot of just kind of long butts and off-camera violence. This one is really over the top. It's super, super sleazy, really bloody. It's uncomfortably violent at times, but also has this like really kind of like subversive and like almost psychedelic quality to it. Where rather than your kind of run-of-the-mill, straight-to-video slashers, this feels like something that could have, you know, came out of you know, kind of a David Lynch sort of era. But no, I mean, this one, I had no idea anything about it, and I was really excited. I think this is something that everybody's going to actually really fucking dig a lot. And but yeah, it's, I mean, as always, you know, we aren't only just sponsored by Vinegar Syndrome that we talk good shit about what they do. They put out quality stuff. They do a lot of the digging. I really love the fact that they're kind of becoming those gatekeepers like we had at the movie rental places when we were kids, who said, "Hey man, check this out." So you weren't always digging through the dreck and muck of straight to video. So
they were digging for you. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, you know, it's funny. Michael St. Gerard is a funny guy to be the lead of some movie like this, because to me, he'll always be Link Larkin from Hairspray. And he's also like has a pretty extensive amount of like roles as Elvis, and even did some Elvis impersonation on in Las Vegas and stuff. And so, you know, he's kind of like a weird, like, you know, not weird, but more of like a, you know, kind of a stud, like an old school, like, you know, heartthrob. And then like I hear about this movie and I look at some of the stills, and yet, like I said, this is one I haven't got a chance to watch yet, and it's sitting right on my pile staring at me right now, and I'm just like, wow. I would never have pictured this guy as the lead for this movie. So, you know, I mean, I'm kind of stoked to check that one out. I know I'm going to at least appreciate it, if not like it, you know?
Yeah, I think this is one that we'll both kind of agree on. Because out of these last couple of deliveries we've gotten for Vinegar Syndrome, it seems like they're getting a little bit more towards your kind of angle here.
Well, I'm a blaxploitation guy. So if you're going to talk about exploitation films, my favorite ones tend to be like blaxploitation films, a lot of them. And so when we're getting things like, you know, Penitentiary and MMA and, you know, like, yes, yeah, this is my kind of taste for sure.
Not Orgy of the Dead and Fugitive Girls?
No, I mean, definitely not Orgy of the Dead, because what did I say to you when I got that? It's not that it's bad, I'm just not sure it's a film.
Right.
So, it's not, calling it a film is a little generous, but yeah, so, again, thank Vinegar Syndrome, you know, it's awesome that we get them to sponsor us, and even if they didn't sponsor us, we'd be talking them up, because we definitely love the work they do.
Oh yeah, no, they're the best, but... Yeah, with that said, let's I think it's time to let everybody get into this interview and see what our good new friend, Danny Francesi. And also, shout out to Danny Francesi. I wish we could have talked more about it. But get us a sponsorship with Winston Box, man. We're two fat guys who need clothes. So, yeah, so holler at your boy.
Well, yeah, man, I didn't realize how much, like, awesome, like, plus-size dude modeling he did. He's a man.
Oh, he's a handsome son of a bitch too. Him and I always see him and Dame Drops, the YouTube fast food reviewer.
Right.
They got those two dudes looking fucking handsome as hell.
Yeah, man. So hey, so listen to this interview, and we'll come back at the end just to kind of wrap it all up.
All right, we'll get back to you soon.
This recording is dirty and it's stinking. Funky other petty LePew, so I was thinking about dropping this single on the charts, letting you know, hey, the kid has heart. I never deny myself, it's genius dope. But in my last jam, niggas slept on my notes. You thought that I was weak? Let me speak. My lines come funkier than your grandfather's feet. So listen, mister, don't you ever forget the rhyme is dirty. You couldn't even clean it with timing. Or even Borax, I'm trying Ajax, only mix with the best. 48 tracks, yo, I get down with the A-song sounds. Lyrics that be going from miles around. So let the music shut down. Break it on down. Fall in your butt, your ass gon' hurt. They call us wing room, cause we master the dirt. I act like a jerk, but I'm out for the dough. Fool master the flow, dirt master the hook. Only master play the fool. I work hard and pay my dues. Tony Snatcher play the fool to run with it, eat it and give you the bones when I'm done with it. I'm in the club with no ID.
I'm Daniel Francesi. I'm an actor and a comedian. And I've been in a whole bunch of movies. And
yeah, you have.
I was in Bully, was my first movie. And I'm probably most known for Mean Girls. But I've also been on television in series regular roles on HBO's Looking, Freeform's Recovery Road, and ABC's Conviction. And I tour the country doing stand-up.
And you're actually you've been doing a tour the last few months, haven't you?
Yeah, since I'm right now January. I've been on tour.
Very cool. And that's been all college campuses?
No, clubs too, and theaters.
Okay.
It's all mixed up, but I am doing a lot of colleges because I feel like I work out my best material with college students, because I feel like they have expanded my own.
No, that's awesome. And I have to say in there, I think you're kind of underselling that role from Mean Girls. I would call it an iconic role. Because
yeah, I would too.
Everybody that I've mentioned about bringing you on the show, they're like, oh my gosh, the best friend from Mean Girls? I think it's just such an iconic role. So I think you're downplaying a little on there.
Well, I don't usually give my own intros, but...
Right. Let's try it again. Of HBO's Looking, iconic figure from Mean Girls, Daniel Francesi.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to have you on. So I had reached out to you because my favorite podcast to listen to is Risk, and you told a story on there. I hadn't known prior to listening to that story that you grew up in the church and you were a Christian, and that's really interesting to us because our podcast, you know, is specifically that we're a bunch of, you know, Blaine and I are both kind of weirdo Christians, and that we like really dark and fucked up films and like to talk about them, and yet believers, and that's kind of like, you know, it all started because I had this article that I wrote that was like, hey, I'm not drawn to these dark films in spite of being Christian. I think I'm kind of drawn to them because I'm a Christian, and they deal with the dark stuff that no one else wants to. And that's kind of like how the impetus of this podcast started, because Blaine and I talked, and he read that, and he was like, oh, yo, me too, let's talk about this stuff. So it was kind of like, yeah, it grew from that. So when
I saw Marcia Gay Harden interviewing her name is escaping me right now. This is the worst time to have a brain fart. But the mom from Exorcist.
Okay.
Yeah, Ellen Bernstein.
Ellen Bernstein, right? So it was Marcia Gay Harden interviewing Ellen Bernstein on the Oprah show. It was Oscar winners interviewing Oscar winners. And Marcia Gay Harden said to Ellen Bernstein, like, I don't know how you do movies like The Exorcist. I don't think I could do a role like that because my faith is too strong. And Ellen Burstyn was like, oh, no, it's the opposite. Your faith has to be totally strong when you work on this type of stuff. Because when you talk about the occult or about weird things, you draw attention from those dark places. And it's like, you have to be strong. Like, and then I saw Marcia Gay Harden have like this moment where then I saw her in The Mist and all these other horror movies later on.
Right.
And I kind of saw her have that on camera, have that like turn. And I was like, I could do those kind of movies too. Like, I feel like I believe it, you know, enough that I don't think that should affect my belief. It's all fantasy. It's about us going, oh, thank God that's not real, and I get to go to church or whatever, you know.
No, absolutely. Definitely. And you've definitely spent a lot of time in in darker films and in the horror subgenre. I mean, with I Spit on Your Grave. Your first film being Bully, which is about, we'll get into it later, but it's dark as fuck. You know, Party Monster and Killer Pad, so you've spent a good amount of time in this genre as well, outside of those, those major more prestige things that you've done as well. So I was
prestige,
really excited.
Like Mean Girls.
Well, bigger studio films, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
that's
probably a good way to put it.
But I have. A lot of my films have been horror or mean-spirited even, or just true crime. Like, I don't know what has identified with me as being cast in those films, because I've auditioned for all types of stuff. But for some reason, that's the material that ends up connecting with me.
No, I guess it's one of those things where certain faces play well, in genres. And I whenever I see you pop up and stuff, especially a movie you keep mentioning, I Spit on Your Grave, it's such a great casting that I never would have expected. So I think it's a lot of fun seeing you pop up in that film.
That's what I turned it down twice initially, because it was so brutal. I mean, I watched the original again. I had seen it a long time ago, but I watched it again in my living room and at just normal volume, and immediately I had to turn it down to low volume, and nobody was home. I was afraid that neighbors would think something was happening.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and that's one of those weird things where I'll be honest, I hate the original film. It's so ugly. I mean, I love Camille Keaton, but it's so hard to watch.
So grimy. Yeah, it's a grimy film.
And I ended up having to watch the remake, and that was one of those things where I did find myself connected with that one a little bit more. Because of the casting and everything along those lines, because I had to review it. I couldn't say no, but no, I think that remake you were in definitely kind of set it off and made it at least make a little bit more sense and tone down at least that first 45 minutes of rape in the original.
Yeah.
45 minutes of rape is how that film starts. It's pretty rough. I completely get what you're saying too. Like I could see it being hard to, say yes to certain roles, but then, you obviously, faith is an important part of your life. And, on the Risk episode I listened to, you were talking a lot about like your faith and sexuality and like wrestling with that. And it struck me as just such an awesome thing to be able to just like tell people about, and you know, I was honestly like really moved by hearing your story. So I really was like, oh, I gotta have this guy on. So, you know, I really do appreciate you coming on to talk with us.
I kind of made a deal like when I was in the closet, it was my like little pact with God that if he would just let me be able to have a career until it was okay to be gay, that I would come out as a gay Christian, and that was sort of my platform for coming out. Like, that was like my little bargain with myself and God in order to allow me to be inauthentic, because I felt really weird being inauthentic all those years. But I felt like when I did come out, I would be able to speak upon that, and that's something I've always wanted to do.
That's awesome. And I mean, that's, there's not, even today in 2018, it's not something we get a lot of. You know, I was just watching the most recent episode of Silicon Valley, and it wasn't that the guy came out as gay that was an issue, it was that he came out as Christian. And it was this like weird thing because they were in Silicon Valley, and you know, it was a very liberal area, and it was kind of a big satirical thing, but you know, hearing the two together is still in 2018 kind of a mind-blowing for some people, I think.
Well, it's weird because now there was a poll where they asked like what the number one thing Christians are known for, and it's for hating homosexuals. Mm-hmm. Not even loving Jesus. Like, the number one thing that is identified with Christians is hating homosexuals. And I think that there's a problem with that.
Right.
You know, there's a really big problem because, you know, one third of our homeless youth is all LGBT kids, and a lot of them are thrown out of their homes by so-called Christian parents. And I really feel like the narrative has to change on that. There needs to be a little bit of enlightenment. The same people who pray for, you know, starving children to find a home will object to a couple adopting. maybe that's God answering their prayer and they're denying it, you know? So it's kind of, it's an interesting way to look at it.
Right.
But I know, you know, I'm in a committed relationship with my fiance, and I think what's more sinful, two men in a committed relationship, or like a man who's like, you know, masturbating to lesbian porn.
that's totally valid. Like, that's such a great point.
Right. It's just interesting to me. And who's to say? Neither, right? So like, who's to say? I'm not the judge. Like, you know, my parents named me Daniel without a middle name because it means God is my judge. And so I've just always been brought up with that belief, that's the only person I really have to answer to when it comes to that.
No, absolutely. And I mean, and part of my background, I'm Episcopalian, so it's been one of those things where, you know, it's, you know, we've always had openly gay, you know, ministers as well as bishops and everything like that. But how does that end up kind of playing along when you're talking to people of other subsections of Christianity with like evangelicals and things like that? I mean, how does that conversation generally go? Explain that you know, you're a Christian and gay.
I'm just a sinner like everybody else. Like, right. That's how I, you know, so it's like, and we're all sinners. Like, I'm not like trying to be anything I'm not, you know. I just don't want to, you know, deny my love of Christ. That's just sort of how I feel about it. Like, in order to be able to like accept somebody else's idea of how I should live my life. And people say it's not somebody else's idea, it's the Bible and da da da, but it's arguable to me because there's many, 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 many mentions of adultery and divorce in the Bible, but only like one or two of homosexuality, and they're in outdated texts that mention other things that people don't adhere to. Exactly. So it's like,
right, like cutting the ends of my beard and wearing clothing made of two different fibers.
Or eating shellfish or whatever. And I'm telling you, like, even straight, like, I had to navigate being a Christian in Hollywood. Pretending I was straight, I was still a Christian. Like, so it's just as weird, you know, maybe even weirder than it is. You know what I mean? Like, the one thing I've never done is deny God. That's the one thing I won't do and can't do. I just can't. So it's like, I don't necessarily bring it up all the time or preach to people or try to convert people or any of that stuff. But if someone brings it up, even like you two are now, like, I will never not speak upon it. That's like something I just won't do. So it does come up from time to time, and I find myself defending it. Most recently, I think I had a conversation about it with these documentarians who were really inquisitive and asking me all kinds of questions, and they were sort of like political theorists and all this other stuff. And at the end of it, they were like, I was like, I know I sound crazy. And they're like, no, actually, you sound woke.
Yeah.
I was like, well, good, because that's how I feel. I feel more woke than some of the other people. I know they're really, just to talk about like pop culture and queerness and all of that stuff, I think it's interesting that like some people think it's weird that people will like raise their hand to like praise God in the church, but then there's people like, you know, crying and falling to their knees in tears with their arms up for Lady Gaga. You know?
Right. No, that's a really fair point. Oh, man.
How weird is it? It just depends on what we're looking at here.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's a fantastically kind of simple, like the simplicity, because it should be just that simple. It's like, of course, you know, navigating as you, like you said, that when you were still identifying as straight and loving Christ, what's the difference making that move? I mean, it always excuse me misparaphrasing people.
No, I just want to be clear. I was always gay and always knew it.
But when you were at least closeted in loving Christ, what's the difference of when you're out of the closet? I mean, it should be that simple of a transition.
I get just as many side eyes.
Like, exactly.
Right.
I'm fine. Like, I almost want like a sweater that says, "I'll take a side eye for Jesus." Like, I know, like, I don't really like. I don't really, never really bothered me. But I do speak upon it because I want young Christians to know that even though your grandma prays the hardest, or even though like your dad's a pastor, or whatever your situation is, like, you are right when you think God loves you. Like, God does love you. Like, that's important.
That's awesome.
That's important to me for them to know, because leaving home for some of them, if they know that, if instead of them smiting God, if they trust in God, I think they can maybe land a little easier knowing that, because with Christ, all things are possible.
Awesome, man. Well, like, I really appreciate like getting into this stuff. It's something that we don't necessarily get into a ton on all of our episodes, but because sometimes we just have fun talking about exploitation films. But other times we get pretty deep. So
me raping and I spit in your grave if you want.
No, that's okay, because we can talk about that. But I want to talk about the movies that we were gonna specifically focus on today. And like, I guess I'd want to start with Kids, because that comes first, even though it's not the movie you're in. But yeah. I thought it would pair really well with Bully, because they're both Larry Clark films. They both have a lot of similarities as far as being very.
Well, that movie had a huge impact on me. Huge impact on me.
So let's start with that then. What did that theme? You know, what did that film mean to you?
I saw a commercial for it, oddly enough, like for like 2 seconds on MTV, I think. And then it coincided with seeing like sort of like a little square in my local newspaper about it playing in an art theater. And I just was so drawn to it. Like, it looked real to me. It looked how, like, I saw young people acting and being portrayed and dealing with serious subjects instead of having like, you know, the Colgate smile and like looking perfect. And it looked real to me. Look how my friends looked. So I sought the movie out and I went by myself to go see it at the theater. And then I ended up seeing it 11 times. I had each friend be like, "Do you want to go?" I would tell friends, "Do you want to go to the movies? There's this amazing movie. Do you want to see it again? Yes, let's go." And I went 11 times in the theater to see Kids. And it became so quotable with me and my friends, all the lines from it and everything else. So I actually understand the Mean Girls fandom, because I had huge fandom for that movie. And all I did was quote movies with my friends growing up. It was crazy to me when I got to meet Larry Clark. Like that trajectory did not seem like an accident. I had not seen any other movie in my life more than twice or in the theater. 11 times was a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So I was doing theater, and one of the people in my show, his partner was like the local drag queen, like reigning drag queen or whatever of South Florida. And she used to have a talent show at one of the bars she worked at. And I wasn't even really out yet, but I would go with them. And the talent show was kind of like not really advertised. It would just be like, "Who has a talent?" or whatever. But since I knew that it was going to happen, I would prepare numbers. And I would win a lot, like, by singing in this talent show. And I would pay my rent and supplement a lot of my rent and some extra income winning the $100 prize every week. Because people really weren't preparing stuff, and I would prepare stuff. And every once in a while, somebody would beat me or whatever. And I went one night to this show, and I saw Brad Renfro and Nick Stahl and Bijou and Larry Clark and the casting director, Carmen Cuba, all walking through the club. And when you're from a place like Fort Lauderdale, you know when, like, eight people from L.A. are in the room. Like, right. It's, like, so obvious because it was all the same people all the time except for the holidays. And then all of a sudden these people with, like, amazing clothing and, like, looks and, like, shit are, like, walking through. You're like, what's happening, you know? And so I saw them go around talking to everybody. And they were like, talking to people, and so they walked away from somebody, and I went up to that person and was like, what's going on? And they're like, they're filming a movie here. And I was like, oh god, any movie they're filming in this dump I don't want to be in, you know. But then they're like, yeah, whatever. But then I saw they were getting really serious, like clipboards and stuff. It didn't look like a weird thing, it looked like something official. And I finally kept moving in position so Carmen Cuba, the casting director, would see me. And she finally made eye contact with me, and she beelined for me, and she was like, hey, I'm making a movie. Would you want to audition for it? And I said, yes, I'm an actor. And she goes, you are? I go, yeah, I'm Equity. And she goes, you are? And I go, yeah. She goes, do you know who Larry Clark is? And I said, no. And she goes, he directed the movie Kids. And I'm like, oh, my God, I love that movie. And I started just, like, rifling off quotes and stuff. And then she was like, do you want to meet him? I'm like, yeah. And so I ran to him and started, like, fangirling, basically. Like, exactly what you don't do to especially that type of an artist. Like, and he just recoiled and just was like, ugh, you know? And then I started getting messages, like, that saying that there was an audition for me. Like, every agency that I was working for sort of made an appointment for me for this movie. And it was so crazy. And a casting director in Miami called me, who I went out for a Fruit Loop commercial for, like, a week before. And he was like, I have this movie for you. Get over here immediately. And so I went that night with my grandma to Miami, which was kind of far. And he saw me and he's like, oh my God, I've been looking all over for you. Where have you been? He's like, do you have a headshot? He's like, give it to me. And he goes, it's too late for you to go to Fort Lauderdale. But, and I go, well, we live in Fort Lauderdale. That's our way home. He goes, it is? He goes, go right now. And I was like, okay. So he faxed over my headshot and I went to this warehouse where they were having the production facility and the auditions were all going on. I didn't even know what it was for or make the connection that it was the people from the club. It was just happening so fast. And I was working at Whole Foods at the time as a cashier, and I called my boss to let him know I wasn't going to make it in. And when I went to borrow the phone, the person at the desk goes, you, and pointed to my picture on the desk. He goes, where have you been? Wait right here. You're in so much trouble. And I was like, what? And then Carmen came out, the casting director from the club, and she's like, I've been looking all over for you. Come talk to me. And essentially told me that it was a true crime, and I looked exactly like the person. And she showed me the picture of the real guy, and it looked just like me. And I was like, oh my God. And she told me about the rest of the cast and explained who they were. I had heard of movies like At Pupil, but I hadn't seen it, you know? And she was like telling me who everybody was. The only person I knew was Rachel Miner, because I knew she was in Anne Frank on Broadway, because I used to get all the New York Times Broadway sections. And I was like, holy crap. I was like, this is nuts, you know? And, so she's like, Larry hates you. Like, she's like, so I want you to go in and be this character. You have 1 week. Like, don't disappoint me. Like, basically go in. And so I immersed myself. I looked up all the articles. I talked to the real sheriff who handled the case. I drove into the audition, and I just slayed it in the room. And he was like, you have the part. You start on Monday. And I was like, what? And that was my first movie. I never even held a screenplay before. And it was such a whirlwind to me. And then immediately I was thrust into, like, this Hollywood-type world where, like, you know, with craziness and drugs and, like, you know, scandals and everything immediately. And it was so different than my theater background of, like, doing, like, Boca, you know, dinner theater.
Right.
I mean, definitely, like, different. And everybody kind of, like, got away with murder and did a whole bunch of crazy shit. And it was, like, kind of what their characters were like, literally getting away with murder until they, like, couldn't keep their mouth shut. So it was like, it all played together, and that's the story of how I got Bully. And then it sort of, like, changed my life from there on, because Larry Clark's a really cool dude and an amazing artist. And he has a lot of impact and a lot of roots in both fine art and cinema. And so I was able to flow through those roots. Like when I got to New York City, I kind of was like a it kid, you know, and got to go. And all the velvet ropes opened for me in all the coolest spots.
Right, because, I mean, at that time, I mean, there wasn't a cooler group of young actors and filmmaker to be working with than Larry Clark. And then you're in a movie with, you know, like you mentioned Nick Stahl and Brad Renfro and those guys. I mean, that
yeah, and 2 years later, I followed it up with Party Monster, which was a small, two small little roles, but still, I was with like Chloe Sevigny and Natasha Lyonne and, you know, Seth Green and Macaulay Culkin, and still cool young crowd. Like my entrance into Hollywood was very cool.
Yeah.
I can't believe now I'm thinking about it that Party Monster is 15 years old. That feels like that doesn't feel that old to me. Like that's crazy to me. Wow.
It is nutty.
Yeah, because I remember when Party Monster came out, my brother and I watched it, I don't know, like 4 or 5 times over the course of like a weekend. Like everyone who came over, we forced to watch it because it was just so over the top and fun. And just well, going
the cool thing about that movie, too, is that all the real club kids all had these amazing jobs in art and nightlife, right?
Right.
Like all the ones who had grown up since the actual incident had happened. Mm-hmm. We're all cemented in like special effects makeup and running galleries and like doing the door to like the hottest place and whatever. And so I met them all as like a star of Bully and now a star in Party Monster. And so New York was just like an open door for me in my 20s. It was amazing.
That's crazy. You know, it's funny to me. I grew up in North Jersey and what the Party Monster was so weird to me because as I'm watching, I'm all of a sudden it's all dawning on me like, holy shit, these are all the parties that my aunt, my mom's youngest sister, would go to when I was in middle school. Like, this is the shit she did. And it was just crazy because it's like, oh my God, like, when all of a sudden it dawns on me, like, oh, the limelight, my aunt used to, like, live there. You know what I mean? Like, and watching that movie was so weird to me. It was like this weird, like, holy crap, I actually, like, I grew up down the street from this, you know, like, but that's a movie I could definitely talk about for a day. I'm a big fan of that one too. But like, it's really crazy how like Kids was such an impactful movie to you. And then like a couple years later, you know, you get to be in a film and watch, you know, and meet Larry Clark and, you know, kind of get engulfed in that. That's a really awesome story.
Yeah. I mean, you call it crazy or call it divine, you know, right. I thought it was so like, you're doing the right thing. And that's why I made darker choices, because those kind of things that were brought to me were brought to me in such a, you know, interesting and weird way. Like even Party Monster for me, there was no role for me in that movie. Like my managers were like, we can't send you out on it. There's nothing for you. And I was like, I belong in this movie. So they called the casting director and was like, hey, can you tell him no? Because he won't take no for an answer from us. And so they let me go to the audition, and she was like, I like you, but I don't know what there is for you to do. Take the script home. If you see something you like, then come back to me and let me know, and we'll talk. And I read the script, and everything was so small, but I was like, what if I did two parts? And when I came back to meet the directors, they offered me one, and I'm like, but can I also play the other one? And they were like, yeah.
It's kind of hilarious.
It just seemed like it all was, like, working out. I could use a little bit more of that serendipity right now. I've been having some with this, you know, since I've really been giving a lot of energy towards stand-up, I've been seeing a lot of serendipitous things happen in that way, and I feel really happy about that.
It's awesome. And, you said you went to see Kids 11 times, and it's just dawning on me as I'm thinking about that. I don't think I could watch that movie 11 times in the theater. That's a pretty heavy movie. I don't think I've watched it more than 3 or 4 in my life, and it's not because I don't like it. It's because like every time I like shake, you know, parts of that movie of how like effective. Now, and I'm a father, and so now it hit. And the last time I watched it, it hit me even harder. So yeah, it's a movie that I don't think I could watch 11 times in the theater.
I don't know. It's just I never saw anything at my age. That was people mm-hmm. of my age.
That's fair.
So real. It was almost like looking. That movie was. It was transcendent for me because even though it does have a horrible ending, sitting next to a friend and being like, "Can you believe that shit happened to Jenny?" Like, it was like we couldn't believe that this was a story that felt like it was being told by us, for mm-hmm. us. Like, I don't know. It was uniquely impactful. And I really think that, especially being a baby LGBT person, that the, you know, HIV part of it wasn't lost on me either.
Right.
You know, I kind of was like, I felt the power that came with that word. You know, and like, so that was impactful to me. And then to see people like Rosario Dawson, who's so like, I mean, she was found on a stoop right before that. So like, she's so Lower East Side New York. Like, I wasn't seeing different people like that, you know, in Florida. I was seeing my kind of friends, you know. It was right. interesting to be like, wow, that would have, if I stayed in New York, maybe my friends would have been like this. There was something, it was so enchanting.
No, absolutely. And also, I mean, you think about those roles, I mean, specifically for me, like Leo Fitzpatrick, man, it's telly. It was so, for me, it was understandable. Even though I was, you know, a guy who grew up in the suburbs, you know, in Texas, then Georgia, everybody knows a guy like that. You know what I mean? And just seeing him go through this day, because you always, I don't know, it was, for me, that's what it's always played on the strengths of that film for me.
By the way, in real life, Leo is the sweetest human being. Like, and so nice, and so cool to be around, and so smiley, and so the antithesis of all the characters he played.
Right.
Oh, he, I have friends who knew him because I grew up in North Jersey, where he's from, and they always said he was like an awesome dude.
You know, one time he told me a story. He had a black eye. We were both at the same audition a long time ago, and somebody just came up to him at the train and was like, you know, you rigged Jenny, and just punched him in the face.
Oh, shit. Oh,
God. I feel like I've read him saying he got, like, he gets, like, tormented for it even to this day when people recognize him. It's crazy.
It's weird because my fans span across, like, so many different platforms, but Bully fans are, like, cinephiles and, like, homeless people.
Right.
Wow. That's good.
And, like, really big art historians who are, like, I did my thesis on that. At like, you know, like, you're like, it's all different types of people.
Right. And like, with Bully, it's so funny because I get people always ask me because I'm, you know, I'm known as a guy who likes, you know, really fucked up movies and whatnot. You know, it's people always, you know, like, you know, friends or work are like, hey, man, what's the most fucked up movie you've seen? And without any kind of hesitation, I always say Bully. And I'm like, it's not a horror movie. It's not like Cannibal Holocaust or something like that. I'm like, it is a terrifying true story about people that you probably know someone just like.
Yo, tell me that. Like, I'm going to trip you out now for real. Like, I'm going to trip you out. Like, so it's all the real locations. It's all their real houses. Or
oh, like, my God. That's
where
insane.
It's like across the street from their real house if they couldn't get the real house. It's all like their real environments. And it's the real Pizza Hut. And the inside of the skate shop is the real skate shop and the real Publix that they worked at, like all the way to Dixie, whatever. And it's like also the real judge and the real bailiff and sheriff play themselves in the movie.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
That's
insane. Next fight that we have in the jurors' booth is direct transcript from the court.
Wow! Oh yeah. My God!
Yeah, and that well, Pizza and Hut
commitment right there to realism. Holy crap!
Wild though, right?
Oh, Adam, dude, that's insane. Only Larry Clark could pull that off.
Walk one time in the rain because we was kind of pissed it was raining, and like we need to get a shot outside. And he saw it in the cement. It said, "Lisa loves Marty."
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, oh, my God.
They didn't film for the movie because they thought it was too cheesy, but it was real.
Yeah, because that's something that would almost seem too on the nose that you wouldn't even buy it in a movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, if you know teenage kids and, even you know, kids in their early 20s and whatever, you know, that is pretty realistic. You know, so.
But, yeah, so.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because also that's one thing. It's funny you mentioned the Pizza Hut. Because that's one of those things that always stands out to me. Every time I watch the movie, I go, oh, man, I remember when Pizza Huts used to be like this. And, like, there's such a funny, like, nostalgia. Oh, it's still like that?
There's a few out there, yeah.
Man, yeah, I got to make my way out to those because I have such a strange nostalgia for the old-fashioned Pizza Hut. Maybe it's just the fat dude in me, but I love that old-ass Pizza Hut.
you know, before kale became like in vogue, like in like the most popular like food now, the number one buyer of kale was Pizza Hut. They used to line their buffets with it.
Oh, okay.
That is crazy weird. Oh man, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
With that being like the first movie you were on, were there any of the people that were part of that cast who you like remained friends with and kept in touch with, you know?
I love seeing Leo when I can. I've seen him over the years now and then. He's really great. Kelly Gardner I see the most. We're still friends. We went out and did another movie together. She played Heather Swallers with the blue hair.
Mm-hmm.
So she's gone on like and done a whole bunch of great stuff.
I think of her as in her role in Thumbsucker. That's right. Probably Thumb one of the Sucker, ones that I think
of. Yeah. Marilyn on Lifetime, Round mm-hmm. the Road. She did like Love Liza with Phyllis and the Hawkins.
And she was the love interest in Daniel Radcliffe's Horns.
Okay.
I'm bizarre like weird horror movies. Well, but anyway,
fantastic. But she's been my friend for a long time. We keep in touch, especially with social media, it makes it a little easier, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but that's great. And of course, I did another movie with Nick Stahl, called On the Inside with Nick Stahl and Olivia Wilde. And then that's a cool little movie about jail. And then I did, and of course, Brad, man. So sad about Brad Renfro. What a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean that still gets me because there's so many roles from the, you know, that era, the early 2000s that I, you know, I still go back to, and even into, you know, even up until just a couple of years before he passed, there was some really, you know, really some great stuff. Like I mean, I love did a movie called Happy Campers with Dominique Swain.
Yeah,
I love that movie and go back to that all the time. I mean, he's just a really talented guy, and every time you hear people talk about him, you talk about how like nice a dude he was, and it's a shame.
Yeah, you know, think about him in Tart, man. Fuck, he's so good in Tart.
Yeah, an App Pupil.
Oh yeah, an App Pupil. Yeah, Ghost World.
Oh God, man. I forget about him in App Pupil. Man, that movie is.
What's the other movie he did with like Kevin Bacon?
Was it Sleepers? Was he in Sleepers?
Yeah.
He was in Sleepers, and man,
really good actor.
Go ahead.
He's from Knoxville, and like I feel like he had that like jackass thing about him. You know, he was friends with Jonathan. Mm-hmm. Like he just like was really like wild. You know, like the first day I met him at Table Read, it was charming. Like because he had like such a funny smile, but like he. He was drinking, he was in a, like, white, like, a tank top, right? With, like, a gallon of water that he was drinking straight out of the jug, and it was, like, spilling on him. And he, like, had flip-flops on, and he came up to us, and he smelled like lighter fluid. And he was like, I can't get the barbecue to work. Like, the Table Read starts in, like, 3 minutes, like, you know, like. And he was like totally flammable. I was like, whoa.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the stories from that, you said that they everybody's kind of wild and crazy, you know, all young kids, you know, so it's kind of an interesting set to be on, I'm sure.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. I mean, I actually was surprised, like, I actually had really incredible experiences on films in my life. Where it wasn't this kind of way, but I was always like, are people going to act like this forever? I'm so grateful to be where I am and do the things I do, like truly. Like a theater person could be this, have their name on the marquee, but the true theater person will also like sweep the stage. And I think I've kind of always had that mentality with my projects. Like I've always been like somebody who loves being able to do what I do. But in Hollywood, and it wasn't on this movie, but on one movie, I had somebody on the first day, I was like, I'm really excited to get started. And they were like, yeah, like, this one's going to be good. On the first day. And I'm like, what? Like, you would never hear that from somebody in a play.
Right.
And it's just so crazy to me, like, you know, navigating personalities. Even though there are personalities in theater, it's like, everybody works so hard in theater, so I have a different kind of work ethic, I think, when it comes to working on film.
That's what I enjoyed about Looking so much, is that I'm looking, everybody had that ethic. Like, everybody worked so hard and loved the show and loved their characters. And the writers were playwrights and actors themselves and performers and entertainers themselves. And it just really felt like an environment for that sort of thing to thrive, you know? That's what I look for next. Like, people want to know, what do you want to do next? It's like, I really just want to be in an environment where everyone is so grateful to be there and creating something really special and important. And I don't know what that means. It could be the funniest thing ever. It could be the scariest thing ever. I don't know what it means. But I want to be in an environment where everybody is really happy to be there.
So with that in mind, besides the touring around, which is awesome, and focusing on your stand-up, what other kind of stuff are you working on, you know, that people can check out in the, you know, near future or even now?
Well, just as like a tease, it's not really a checking it out, but I'm like, I really want to direct a feature in the next couple of years. Cool. Yeah, and I definitely want to do something in the horror space too. Because I think it's so fun. I definitely want to write more, you know, and be involved in doing that kind of stuff. So I would welcome a show that might come out of like me doing stand-up. That would be a nice thing. Like, that's not why I'm doing it, but I feel like that's a possibility. That's what happens when you write a lot of material. And I'd love to do some more theater too. You know, I'm excited. I did this play, The Heart of Robin Hood, here in Beverly Hills last year. And next year it's going to Hong Kong for a theater festival. I'm excited to stay in that role and perform that. And I'm just like, waiting for the right next thing. But know that the next thing will be a really thing that I choose. Because I feel like a lot of times in careers, actors have to take the thing that comes. But I'm taking the thing that I choose next. So I'm excited about that.
It's cool. I recently got to talk briefly to Lance Hendrickson. And it was funny. He's at a point in his career, since he's done so many things he's chosen, where he just likes what comes to him. He's like, because I asked him, what are the things you wish you could still do? He's like, honestly, I've done everything I want to do. So now I just kind of like seeing what kind of weird stuff gets thrown my way.
The stuff that gets thrown my way, I tend to like too, because people are thinking of me already. My vibe. So I haven't never really had too much of a problem with things that come my way. I welcome that all the time. Like, I'm actually interested in who's the next Quentin Tarantino. Like, who's the next like young guy that like loved Bully and loved all of that stuff, that understands and gets what I do, that has like an idea, that knows that I could sink my teeth into. I'm ready for like an Oscar or like Emmy level kind of moment for myself.
Well, lucky for you, was on our podcast already. Have you seen the movie Low Life yet?
No.
Oh my god, it's on VOD now. You gotta go see this. It's getting compared. He's getting compared to Tarantino a lot. That's why it came to mind. I think there's shades of it, but I think there's a much different voice there. But it's like it's just a modern exploitation film about a luchador wrestler who also works in a sex ring and like a prostitution ring, and all these stories that kind of collide. Oh my, I don't even know how to sell it. It's just, it's got this crazy energy. It has a guy who gets out of jail who is not at all racist, but has a giant swastika tattooed on his face. There's an explanation for that, and it's ridiculous. But, it's just such it's got like a weird frenetic energy, but also a very serious thing going on too. You got to check it out, man.
Rejected it.
Ryan
Prowse.
Yeah, no, you need to talk to that guy.
I'm so like gonna text Ryan when we get off. And be like, Ryan, so just talk to Danny Francesi, and you got to write a movie for him.
I got a big question for you though, Danny. Would you come back to do Blood Feast 3 and reprise your role?
Why I did Blood Feast 2?
I've been trying not to bring it up, but I've got to ask, because I love
Blood anything. Feast 2. This is the time. Go to deep cuts.
Okay, let's go deep cuts. Blood Feast 2. I kind of love hate Herschel Gordon Lewis, but I completely love Blood Feast 2, All You Can Eat. And, yeah, I would love to hear any why you made that movie and when we're getting number three.
So my hero, my first director that I was like, this is the person that I love, is John Waters. I loved Hairspray, and I loved Zero Mom, and I looked them both up and to see who directed them. And when I found out it was the same person, I started going to all of his movies, which led me to his crazy Dreamland movies, right? And so I became a rabid fan in college, and this is like before the internet was really good. I used to call like from Florida, in Palatka, Florida, at my school, Florida School of the Arts. I would call like Vidiots, like in Santa Monica,
right.
and I would call like Kim's Video in New York, and beg them to like make copies for me, like the guys who work there. I'd be like, I'll give you $100 if you make me a copy of like Eat Your Makeup. You know what I mean? Like, and they would, and that's how I. And then I would also trade people in rooms. And then also Jacksonville, which still to this day is a big like John Waters like spot. Like, it was not too far from me, and they had a screening of Pink Flamingos, and I watched it with two of my friends, and we like we died in our popcorn. It was the only time in my life I think I've never finished the popcorn. Like, like it was crazy. So I was a huge fan of his, and so when I was working on Bully, I had one of those TVs with the VHS attached to it in my trailer.
Right.
And I only had one VHS tape. I had Divine Trash, the documentary. And I would watch like 10 minutes of it, and then I would go to back onto set. And then I'd come back to my set, and I'd play it again, and I'd watch like 5 minutes of it, and then I'd stop it and leave again. And then after I finished it, because I didn't watch it all in a row, I'd watch it again. Like, I just left it on for the, you know, time we were working on the shoot. And Boyd Ford, who is Brad Renfro's assistant, passed by the trailer and was like, huh. There was like a Blood Feast segment. He goes, you know, Herschel Gordon Lewis lives in Fort Lauderdale where we are right now. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, I wonder like what he's doing. He's like retired. Like, I bet you if he maybe make a Blood Feast 2. And so Boyd wrote Blood Feast 2.
Right. Yeah.
And then called up Herschel Gordon Lewis, who was like, sure, I'll do it. And when they found out that John Waters was willing to do a cameo, they only like felt like they owed it to me to like come to set. And they basically were like, look, you're going to have to pay for your own flight, and you won't get paid to do this. And we could maybe get you to, like, share a room with, like, one of the PAs. But John Waters is doing a scene this day, and if you come here, we can't even promise you you'll be in the scene with him, but we'll try to make that happen. So I was like, okay. So I got off the plane, and John Waters was like, oh, my God, I'm such a big fan of yours, is what he said to me.
Oh, my God. And
oh my God, did you melt? Did you just completely melt right there?
I really, like, did not speak. I was like, I didn't know what to say. He was so gracious and cool. And then, of course, he, like, because he loved Bully, he really wanted me in the scene with him then. And then they sat us at a table where him and I wrote the little jokes back and forth that we say.
Right.
So I wrote, like, a little scene with John Waters. Like, I was dying, right?
That's amazing.
And then we sat in a scene that was directed by Herschel Gordon Lewis, watching all the mistakes and laughing at Herschel a little bit even. You know what I mean? Like, the glaring things that we wouldn't do. And I sat for 12 hours at a table with John Waters where I could ask him any question I wanted.
That's amazing.
Yes, that is one of those things where I have him so high on a pedestal, I would be afraid to meet him. Because I have a feeling I'd end up just clamming up and just awkwardly, like, playing with my phone.
I mean, not only did I, like, meet my hero out of the gate, but I got to, like, write a little scene with him and be in a movie by Herschel Gordon Lewis with him.
Right, and the first thing he says to you is that he loves you. Like, I love your work. What?
I died. I really died. And then he was so gracious and cool. And would call me up when he would be in New York and be like, where are the cool clubs? What should I do? Where should I go? What films have you seen lately? Like, and I would send him Christmas cards, and he would send me Christmas cards.
That's so
and,
cool.
We lost touch like that over the years, but every time he's in town, I'll go see him. Or if he has, like, an art show or something, I'll stop by and say hi.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's just a really cool person.
Okay, so I can have faith in Blood Feast 3 eventually happening. We just need
Boyd.
If John wants to reprise his role, I will.
Well, Boyd, but then they got to find a director for it, though. Would Boyd direct and write then?
I'm sure.
Oh, that Fort Lauderdale is full of so many people that owe a favor to Herschel Gordon Lewis. I'm sure someone could step in that role because he's one of those guys that through a lot of the, because we cover a lot of low budget and no budget cinema as well. And when he made the Uh-Oh Show probably, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I mean, that launched a lot of people from that area into, you know, just making their own fucking movies, you know?
Sure. The filmmaking vibe there, and also Jackie Morgan, who is the producer on right. that, and also Bully. And also a movie I did in between both of those called Hometown Legend. Jackie really helped get me my start. It was really good to me. And, like, you know, kind of helped me get out there. Like, my second movie, like, we were like, hey, you know, if you don't mind sharing a room with this other guy we're trying to bump up to head PA, then the two of you get a bump up and get to be in this next movie. And we did that, you know?
That's awesome.
Everything I've ever done has not been easy. Things don't come that easy to me, and like, that's just my destiny, and I'm not complaining about it. It's part of who I am, and I totally accept it. And I'm up for the challenge, but I've had to work or do some kind of like something for everything.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and I mean, with working on that movie, did you get to interact at all with Herschel Gordon Lewis and see what it was like watching him kind of coming back to film after, what, like a 30-year hiatus?
Absolutely. He was, like, the director of the film. So I worked with him, and I worked with, oh, man, his name escaped me. The famous producer is always with him. So I worked with both of them, and it was just lovely to be able to do it. I mean, we were laughing. You know, like, he'd be like, walk across the room, and the extra would walk across the room, and her heels were so loud. And then he'd be like, cut. Print it, and John would be like, with the heels? Like, you know, we were just, like, dying. Like, it was really fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, and I appreciate, like, all these the you coming on. This is so cool. And, you know, and now that I have your contact information, trust that I'm going to bug you to come back on again someday to talk about some Warrior films, especially maybe some of these bizarre deep cuts. Like, maybe we'll actually do an episode where we actually – you know, talk about these ones or Killer Pad or some of these really awesome flicks you've done. But I just want to give you an opportunity to let the listeners know where they can check you out.
You can just go to whatsupdanny.com or whatsupdanny anywhere on the internet, like Instagram, Twitter. I have a verified Facebook page that's how you know it's me. And everywhere else I'm whatsupdanny or my website, which will have my calendar of live appearances on it.
Awesome, man. Hey, well, thanks so much for coming on, Dan. And is Dan Danny Daniel? What do you prefer?
It's Daniel Franzese or Danny Franzese. I don't really go by Dan, unless like you're trying to like throw me like some keys or something.
Okay.
the next time I toss you a beer, I will make sure to remember to call you Dan.
Yeah, precisely. Like if it's like think fast, I'll take the shortened version.
Okay.
Okay. Or like I was telling Blaine, I like that his name is one syllable, so when I get mad at him, I can yell it like Con. So if I was mad at you, I could be like Dan. But otherwise, I'll stick with Danny or Daniel.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Well, thanks a lot, Daniel, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. I'm really happy to have been considered.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
He was smiling through his own personal hell. Dropped his last dime in a wishing well, but he was hoping too close, and then he fell. Now he's Casper, the friendly ghost. He was always polite to the people who tell him that he was nothing but a lazy bum, but goodbye to them, he had to go. Now he's Casper, the friendly ghost.
Oh, and we're back. Sorry about that. I know you don't really want to hear us. You want to hear more Daniel. But we are back, and we just wanted to touch a little bit more on the films we chose, Bully and Kids, because we love those films, and our conversation was awesome, but I felt like we didn't get enough into some of the themes of those films, so we want to just touch on them a little bit. I want to start with Kids, because chronologically that comes first. That's the only reason I choose Kids first. And Blaine, when did you first see Kids?
I first saw Kids probably right about 1996, 1997, whenever it hit VHS.
Shit.
Yeah, so that's about when I saw it, probably, you know, sophomore year in high school. Right. You just said that we both love both of these movies. I didn't get a chance to mention this, but I don't love the movie Kids. I didn't love it really? Then. I don't really love it now.
Saying I love it is probably either of these saying I love them per se is probably inappropriate because I kind of hate both of them in a way, but I actually really like appreciate them a lot, and maybe I appreciate Kids more than you. So we'll get into that in a second. But like, I saw Kids probably a year or two later than that. I saw it when I was still in high school. But I was barely in high school, I think. I want to say I was like 99. And that movie fucked me up then. And I didn't watch it again until, well, whenever they released the vinyl soundtrack, which was last year. So that was the last time I watched it, you know, again, was last year. And it fucked me up just as much. In fact, maybe even worse now that I'm a parent. And it feels just as real. And I think the problem I have with that film is how fucking real it is. There's a lot of underage kids wearing way too little clothing. It's 100% legal what they're wearing, but it is really creepy when you watch it, because it's like kind of, you know, if you watch it when you're their age, maybe it doesn't feel as creepy. But when I watch it now, I feel like I'm ogling little kids, and it's really feels dirty. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, I mean, and that's part of that, because there's a lot of things I am going to say a lot of good things about the film, but that's one of my problems with that film is that because we're constantly behind this leering eye, and I feel like it plays so much to the salaciousness of it. I think that where a lot of it is shot so real, some of that lingering like gaze that we get of like youth and like and everything on that side, it starts to border on tabloid to me. It's one of those things where it can kind of break the reality after a while, because I'm thinking this is just weird because we're just hanging out with, you know, with you know, shirtless underaged people. Both male and female. So, I mean, even at the time, it always kind of broke that for me. The stuff that does work really well, especially when we're following around, following around Leo and them, on the street. That's all the stuff that I love. When you're meeting Telly and they're kind of traversing through New York, and you kind of get an idea of what these kids' lives are like growing up in a city, because that's something that's very foreign to me. I always grew up in the suburbs. Shit, I live in the suburbs now. I love the suburbs. And it was just really different to see, you know, kind of watch that of, you know, just kids my age in a completely different setting. I mean, Larry Clark he's so good behind the camera throughout the film. I mean, you can see, you know, that his roots are in photography, because I feel like he's more or less making a photograph album more than even a movie, more of a snippet of time or you know, kind of slice of life. I'm using every bad cliche that comes through my mind right now, but yeah. So I mean, there's a lot I like about it, but you know, it still doesn't do much for me. I feel nothing throughout the film, and when it's done, I feel a little less than nothing. So I don't know. I'm incredibly glad it exists. It kind of kickstarted a lot of great things. Kickstarted one of my favorite directors, Harmony Korine, who has writing credits on this. But besides that, I mean, great acting, great directing. Movie just still doesn't really get my mojo going.
I mean, it fucks me up. I don't know how it doesn't hit you harder. It's just so real. Even as someone who grew up in the suburbs, like I knew some of those kids, and they're, you know, and you know, it just, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not going to be upset. I'm sorry if somebody's listening to this and I'm spoiling a, you know, 22, 23 year old movie. Yeah, I don't really feel that bad. But like, because, you know, the ending, you know, with finding out. Basically, with a guy raping his friend, supposed friend, because she's passed out drunk, or high, or whatever the fuck she is at that point, and we know that, you know, they're spreading AIDS.
You got AIDS, yo.
And a lot of people in that movie are young and have AIDS, and we find out that when you put two and two together, you realize there's a 13-year-old little sister girl who has HIV too, based on who she fucked. Do you know what I mean? It's fucked up when you really kind of put it all together.
Oh and, yeah, no, I mean it's still fucked up, but how far does it go to prove it's fucked up? And after a while, it's like, and you know, and I love the movie Precious, but I love it in the same way where it's like, how far are we gonna go to prove that this is a fucked up group of kids? Like, yeah, I mean, I know a bunch of scumbags that grew up with a bunch of fucking Tullys and or Tellys and those kind of guys, but you know, like after a while, I just feel like and that's where I kind of depart and where I get kind of pulled out of it is I just think what works in the reality goes so far to where it's almost like it's almost self-parody where I'm like, oh yeah. And then you know what's going to happen. He's going to rape her and give her AIDS. Yeah. You know, like I feel, and I mean, and I understand it's a movie and he wants to kind of show the extreme part of it. But I just feel like when you're doing that kind of realism, I think you should have a certain, it'll make you sure you hold on to that realism. And part of that could be the fact that a 40-year-old man's trying to tell the story of a bunch of 13 to 16-year-olds.
Sure, but I mean, like, you mentioned Harmony Korine, who has a writing credit and wrote a lot of this script, and Harmony is significantly younger than that. I mean, he's 10 years older than us, but I mean, he would have been in his 20s right now.
Right.
So you still have somebody who's a lot closer in age connected to it. But I mean, I guess I just don't see it the same way as you, despite the fact that like what you're saying just doesn't resonate with me because I just I see how maybe it's over the top, but at the same time, like it doesn't make it feel less grounded in reality to me because it's very much like this culture feels real. To me, and I don't know, but I mean, I will say, like, as an adult watching this movie, I feel almost like I just watched child porn. You know what I mean? Like, not to say that I can compare that because I've never watched actual child porn, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels that way. It feels gross. And so, as an adult, I have a much harder time watching it in that sense. When I first saw it, I was, you know, maybe only a couple years older than the main characters, and maybe even around the same age as some of them, you know? So it didn't feel as gross. The movie felt just as poignant, but maybe even more so. But I get what you're saying. But that leads us into the second film, also by director Larry Clark, which is Bully. And that movie actually, as everybody just heard, and hopefully a lot of people already knew, one of the I guess you would call him like one of the main secondary characters. He's not one of like the main like four or five, but he's like the sixth.
Yeah, he plays cousin Derek. He's kind of one of those. He's not that core three or four people, you know, with Rachel Meyer.
He's like the five or six though. He's part of the group. You know, he's important.
Yeah, like you heard us talk about. He's in that fucking awesome Pizza Hut scene, which is my favorite because of that Pizza Hut. And but he's definitely, I mean, he's a star of the film. And
his performance is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Danny's performance, to know that that's his first on screen appearance, you know, like that's the first movie he was in, is pretty incredible. Because, like, there are scenes where just his emotion just feels more real than anybody's. You know what I mean? Like, the way he reacts to certain things, just, it's really impressive. I guess I didn't realize until talking to him and thinking about it that it's like his first film. And that's pretty huge. You know what I mean? Like when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's a huge. Yeah, think at this time. I mean, this is Larry Clark is not like, because these days he's still well regarded as an artist and a filmmaker. But you got to think, this is 2001. He just got done making what, Another Day in Paradise with James Woods, and like he is on a roll. He is a Hollywood big shot at this point, and what he delivers is, I know you guys all heard it in the interview, but this is still like the most disturbing movie to me. It just, it is so dark. And a lot of films have tried to make true, like kind of true crime stories like this as dark as Bully, movies like Alpha Dog and similar. They can't do it. There's something about this that's so, oh, it's so fucking South Florida, and it's so, it's it, this, and like, and some of the things that maybe that don't work with me with kids kind of flips on the other end with Bully, where this all resonates way too real and way too conceivable, because Nick Stahl is one of the best villains I think to ever be on screen. It's
as far as like villains, I mean, like, he's definitely one of the best villains in a non-horror movie, but I would say villains period. Like, it reminds me a lot of how, like, I only saw Bully for the first time this week, so it's still settling in on just how effective he is. It reminds me of Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet.
Yeah, he's
basically is the same guy as a kid. Like, yeah. You know, like, that's what I imagine Nick Stahl's character to grow up to be if he had grown up. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's because to me, it's like he's not like the Joker, but I feel like he's like on par with that kind of villain, to where I don't think his actions make any real sense to anyone but him. And the way he gets his comeuppance is fantastic, because it's the worst crime, it's the stupidest crime ever committed by some of the dumbest people.
Right, who are so obviously not criminals. Like, they don't know what the fuck to do.
No, but at the same time, I love it, because you're framing this around the murder of maybe one of the most repulsive people on screen, at least in the past 30 years, just the sexual and emotional humiliation that he puts Brad Renfro through in the film. Like, I have no sympathy for that fucking guy. So once they're doing it, it's almost becomes this very true to life comedy of errors. Just to follow my string of cliches tonight. I love this movie. This is when my brother and I when we were living together in college, this was kind of one of our regular movies that we would sit around, get stoned, and watch. We'd watch Bully, we'd watch 13 and Tart. It was kind of like,
those are really fucked up movies to watch stoned, dude.
We just sit around, get stoned, and
then watch really fucked up shit.
Yeah, and our mutual friend Josh Cripps, he stayed with us for a while at that house, and he would show up and just be like, "What's wrong with you guys? Are you just gonna sit here and watch Bully all day?" And we're like, "Man, I don't know. It's just there's so much to that film, and just hearing the stories about how Danny got involved is." Just adds to already a film.
It does.
You know, kind of.
Well, and him talking about how, like, a lot of, like, they're real, not murder and not some of the way they treat each other, you know, whatever, but, like, they were real life antics. They were dumb kids.
Right.
Like, the people, you know, that were on the film. So it's very, like, interesting. But, you know, we probably talk a lot about both these films, but I think what's most, that jumps out most on these, and I think we talked about this with Danny last night, too, when we recorded that, but I just mean they're very real. Like, what, and I guess that's obviously like the hallmark of Larry Clark's work, is it's very much meant to be like the darkness of reality, you know, and in like it, style wise, it's very like filmed to be like
the shirtless teenager of reality,
the shirtless teenager or fully naked 20 something.
Well, not
close. And by 20-something, I mean, like, 19.
I know, and if you are playing the Grindhouse Messiah drinking game, it's time that I bring up the tagline and how much I love it for Bully. I remember the posters. It said in big letters, "It's 4 a.m. do you know where your kids are? And I always thought that was great. God.
That is awful in all the best ways. So
yes.
With that in mind, folks, we appreciate you coming, checking out this episode. I think it was a really great conversation. Daniel is one of the coolest people we've talked to. And, I mean, honestly, that's saying a lot because we've talked to some awesome people. And I really, every guest we've had on has been great. But Dan was – not Dan. He doesn't go by Dan. Danny. Danny, Daniel. God, I'm struggling with the way to say his name. I don't know why. Daniel is awesome.
Yeah.
So – Daniel, forgive me for calling you Dan just now. I know that's not your favorite. Although you did give me permission, like, if I was angry at you, to yell it. So, Dan! But seriously, man, thanks for coming on. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with some other really cool guests. Coming up soon, we got Ashley West from Rialto Report. We have our one-year anniversary episode that we're still in the process of planning sometime in May. The Rebecca McKendry episode is going to happen at some point soon. Our schedules just keep not lining up, but that's coming.
Hooper, George Romero.
Yeah, we're going to actually have a seance for all those guys. That's actually going to be our big anniversary episode. Yeah, but in all seriousness, we have a lot of cool stuff coming up, and we really appreciate everyone. I think I've said now we really appreciate like 13 times, so it's probably time for me to give it to you to sign us off.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you again to our great guest with Danny Francese. Thank you guys all for listening. Just to remind everybody, we are still taking submissions for Buried Alive Film Festival. Go to Film Freeway, look up Buried Alive, send us your fucking movies. We want your movies. We want to show them. We want to hang out with you guys in November. So so just make sure you're checking that out and sending them over. I will watch your movie, and I will either give it thumbs up, thumbs down. But thank you guys all for tuning in. We're going to be back soon with some more ridiculousness. We love you all, and peace.